Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 118, The Jedi. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the chopper to my R2-D2, Mr. Carl LeClaire.
Uh-huh. I love being Chopper. He's my favorite droid. I finally get your love of R2 because of Chopper, because Chopper's so much fun. He's the cutest. Yes. I can't do good impressions. Give me some Chopper, Jason. Oh man, Chopper is so wonderful. He could take on R2. No, wait.
I'm not sure about that.
Wait, it's BD9, right? That's the new rolling droid?
BB-8.
BB-8 and Chopper are going to be like best friends, and R2 is going to be like, hey, can I hang with you? And they'll be like, fine. So,
I'm just everybody kidding. Wants to hang out with R2 because R2 is the best.
I suppose. He doesn't do it for me like Chopper does. Chopper's just really funny.
He is.
So, anyway. So, Jason, we're getting another episode out in a timely fashion for once.
I know.
Before your big move. You're moving to Boston, which is really exciting.
Moving, yes. To Boston, not quite. It is north, but it's like 15 miles north.
Well, you're 15 miles closer then. You know what that means. Weekend visits and holidays.
Well, maybe. But yes, next week I will not be in the lair because I will be in the process of unpacking and moving stuff. So,
moving is so arduous.
It is arduous, but it's fun at the same time. It's weird.
Yeah.
But we will most likely still have another episode for you next week. So, Carl is putting some things in motion. So,
well, they've already been set. So we're going to have Joe Hogan's going to take Jason's place next week, and we're going to do a Jar Jar episode. I'm just kidding. No, I am going to have Joe Hogan is going to be our special guest host next week when we do another episode. You'll just have to wait and see what the topic will be.
Oh, I'm excited because I don't even know. So
we're doing a little moving present for Jason. It's going to be your top five favorite moving scenes in Star Wars.
Okay.
Okay, sorry. Let's move on.
We're back.
We're back. And before we get into the episode, we had some things that we left up in the air at the end of the last episode, and we got some people to respond to a couple of things. We were wondering about the Attack of the Clones VHS, and we also couldn't remember the name of the Ewok village in Return of the Jedi, both of which faithful Larians have risen to the challenge, as they say, somewhere.
Yes. But Cody Murphy was the one who chimed in and let us know that Attack of the Clones did have a VHS release. We've been wondering about that. And so, yes, it did. And I'm sure plenty of you knew that. And then Valry let us know that the Ewok village is called Bright Tree Village, which upon reading that, I was like, oh, yes, I do remember that. But I didn't remember at the time of last episode. So.
Yeah, as soon as Jason said it to me, too, a Bright Tree Village light went off over my head. And I was like, I knew that. So in correction to what I said last episode, the name of the house we're all staying in will be called Bright Tree Village.
Yes. Excellent. And yes, we will be staying there. And the exciting thing, real quick tangent about Celebration Anaheim, is the exciting thing is as long as all the scheduling stuff works out, the likelihood of Carl and I being on the podcast stage is pretty high. We will likely be on the podcast stage for the Rebels podcast panel with Michael Cohen and Matthew Krenke, and that is going to be the last panel of the convention on the podcast stage.
Mm-hmm. That's
which
right.
I think is 1 o'clock or 1:30 on Sunday. So, but as things get, details get finalized and everything, we will definitely keep you guys in the loop on that. So, exciting things coming in the next 2 months. In 2 months, we will be in the middle of Star Wars Celebration.
I know. 2 more months. That's nothing. Remember when it was like 2 years away?
Yes, I do. And that was atrocious to have to wait that long. And now it's 2 months, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope I have everything in order to go in 2 months.
And you know what we're going to say in a month? Only 1 more month.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
It's exciting. But yes. But before we get to our topic, we had a matchup from last episode. And Carl, what was that?
Well, our matchup, which was a lot more one-sided than I was expecting, was Asajj Ventress, the famous Sith assassin from Star Wars The Clone Wars, versus the Inquisitor from Rebels. I'm practicing my voices, Jason. What do you think?
Well, yeah, pretty good, pretty good.
Jason's very supportive.
You're more of new voices rather than an imitator. So,
okay.
We'll put that positive spin on it. Now for the Larian responses to the matchup. so, I cracked myself up. Anyways, and I snorted. That's really, really professional on live podcasting.
I like it.
but for our Larian responses for the matchup, on Facebook we got quite a few. Kenny Crately Jr. says, the Inquisitor, he's more powerful. Michael Cohen says, hands down, Asajj Ventress. The Inquisitor can't even handle a half-trained Jedi and his Padawan, Jabba, as Ezra has introduced himself before. Asajj has gotten the better of Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka at one time or another. Old Stripey Face ain't even in the same league as Ventress. Roger Peroni says, Ventress. Brian B. Klein, Ventress. Jessica Anderson, Ventress. Matt Gulledge says, Ventress, she's pretty formidable without using the Force, whereas the Inquisitor is pretty beatable even with a spinning blade. He's got a cool look, though. Zach Williams, Inquisitor. Asajj would, of course, underestimate him, and then he would break her down psychologically, then use a spin blade and throw it right at her head. Cody Murphy, it's got to be Ventress. Vader's got to keep his Inquisitor pretty weak so that he's not betrayed or decides to team up with him and overthrow Palpatine. Anthony Markham says, Ventress. Mateo Garcia, Ventress. She's faced some of the galaxy's best Jedi and won at times. She's extremely capable and skilled in the dark side. The Inquisitor's experience seems more academic. Kyle Avery says, Ventress. Joe Cinta, Asajj, 8,761,614%. She's a beast. Brian Bailey, Asajj Ventress. She has Force powers. The Inquisitor does not. Actually, he does. But anyways, Ventress would force pull the Inquisitor towards her to impale him with her dual lightsabers, to give him a kiss of death, and then with a flick of her wrists, it's off with his head. Our buddy Lord Bruticus, Joe Mignano, says, make me choose between two Darksiders, are you? Ach, you must be Darksiders yourselves. I admire that. I choose Ventress. She has bounty hunting, Sith witchcraft, and the fairer gender persuasion on her side. The Inquisitor doesn't even have a proper name. And that is my Lord Bruticus impression.
If you guys don't know who Joe Mignano is, he's been on the show a few times in the past. Jason just nailed his voice. He has a very great showman's voice. So
it's great. And he does Dark Empire Radio if yes. you want to hear what he sounds like. It's great.
You know,
I just love
you
listening
know you're,
to him.
Well, you know you're big if Jason's impersonating
you. He could read
you.
Me the phone book. It would be wonderful.
I know. Yeah.
So what?
I want to try to get you to do an impersonation of me sometime. A very boring white suburban boy's voice.
Well, I kind of have that anyways. I have a couple more responses here. Justin Montez says Ventress. Justin Rochniak. I am apologizing profusely because I don't know how to pronounce your last name, but it looks cool. Also says Asajj Ventress. Walter Onasenwitz, I hope I pronounced that right, says Ventress. James Bryson Grigger, Asajj. Brendan Sumner, Ventress. And finally, an email from our buddy Lenny Klein says, never a big fan of Ventress going with the Inquisitor. I felt like she was never much of a threat to any Jedi. And that gives us a final Larian tally of 17-3 in favor of Asajj Ventress. And if I didn't read your entire response, please just know that we're trying to keep this segment moving quickly. And so I just picked some of my favorites or some of the most interesting ones to read. We do appreciate everybody's responses and encourage you all to continue responding, but we do have to keep it moving and not extend this section too terribly much. But thank you, everybody, for the responses. And Carl, what say you?
Well, unfortunately, I think I've got to give it to Ventress, too. I really like the Inquisitor. I kind of prefer his character right now to Ventress. Well, actually, that's not true. I really liked Ventress later on. I mean, I always liked her, but they really did a good job of fleshing her character out more and more as the series progressed. But, you know, I can't remember right now off the top of my head who said it exactly, but you read their response and basically said, you know, she fights some key Jedi and wins or at least holds her own. I mean, We've seen the Inquisitor. I mean, he's definitely toying with Kanan, so I don't think it's like that he's really bad and, you know, he's getting owned by Kanan. He's handedly taken on Kanan every time, except for the Tarkin episode. Jason, you've seen it now I can say this. That was an awesome fight. And I loved how the Inquisitor points out that Kanan's gotten better because he's obviously been practicing.
Oh, yeah.
But the fact that the way he does point it out, it's like, yeah, Kanan putting up a little bit more of a fight, but it's still nothing he can't handle, right? So I think to a certain degree, the Inquisitor does toy with Kanan a bit. I think he's a lot more skilled than he's letting on. But Be that as it may, the Inquisitor's job, I mean, what he's even been trained to do is he's kind of a cleanup crew for the scattered Jedi in the galaxy that are like even too, you know, too like whatever for Vader to take care of. Right. So he wasn't raised to be an assassin in the way that like Ventress was. She was trained by Dooku. We see her, you know, go toe to toe with Anakin multiple times. She fights Obi-Wan. And while she never really beats them, she goes toe-to-toe with them. I mean, I don't think the Inquisitor would stand up to Anakin or Obi-Wan. So, you know, I guess I got to give it to Ventress as well. So,
yeah.
But what do you think?
The exciting thing for me with this matchup is that the one that I've picked is not the underdog for once.
Wow.
I'm going to have to go with Ventress too for a lot of the reasons people have said. Primarily because she's faced Obi-Wan and Anakin together at the same time multiple times and lived every single time. Yeah. That's impressive. That is very, very impressive. Impressive. Most impressive. To quote Darth Vader.
I thought that was a Jar Jar line.
Hmm?
I thought that was a Jar Jar line.
No. Huh. Impressive. Most impressive.
I want to record you doing that and then make a fan edit of Empire Strikes Back every time Vader says that and just send it to Joe Hogan. You know, Luke falls down into the carbonite chamber. Impressive. Most impressive.
Nice. We are going to torture Joe Hogan at Celebration Anaheim. Uh-huh. it will happen. Anyways, but... Yeah, no, I mean, most of you guys have already said the reasons why I think Ventress would win, so I'm not going to rehash them. But needless to say, I do think she is a better swordsman. She's stronger in the Force, and is just more skilled overall. So I'm going to have to give it to Ventress over the Inquisitor, which gives us a final tally of 19-3 in favor of Ventress. So
Hashtag no contest.
Yeah, no kidding. Which was a little surprising. I kind of expected Ventress to win, but I didn't think it was going to be by that much.
Right. But after I started reading people's responses as they started coming in, I was like, oh yeah, maybe this wasn't as good a matchup as I thought. I just thought it'd be fun because it's like kind of the two like mm-hmm. lesser Sith characters from both these TV series, so it might be fun. Right. But yeah, that's I don't think it'd be that all that close.
Yeah. Next time we should do, for somewhere down the road, we should do Savage Opress versus the Inquisitor.
Oh, yeah. That might be a little bit. Yeah.
That might be closer. But yes. we'll save that for somewhere way down the road. Hopefully, the matchup at the end of this show.
Or we could do.
Which is going to be epic.
Right.
We'll have a much closer margin. So yeah.
I think a good matchup, too, for the future is Lobot versus the Inquisitor. So I feel like that's a fair fight. Lobot's just like jamming to his like headphones, fighting the Inquisitor.
So. Lobot's, you know, secretly a ninja assassin. You know this, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I don't doubt it for a second. I feel like Lobot and the Rancor Keeper are probably really good friends. So, oh, man. That's what I would love. Jason, we should, like, cosplay at C7. You can be Lobot and I'll be the Rancor Keeper.
Mm. Except you'll be the Rancor Keeper in shape.
Right. And, yeah, you'll be the Lobot with facial hair.
That's true. I could do that. Or I could shave. You know, I have shaven for costumes before. None of the doctors has facial hair. That's my
Jason's figure. Talking about his podiatrist. So. Oh, Doctor Who, aren't you? Just kidding.
Yes. Anyways. Although I do take that back. The War Doctor had facial hair, but he's very, very old. Anyways, back to Star Wars. What are we talking about today, Mr. Leclerc?
You caught me mid yawn, but we're going to be talking. about the Jedi. The
Jedi,
yes, the keepers of the peace, not soldiers.
Yes, every single Jedi, including Mike Cohen's friend Obi-Wan Kenobi, because he does have a comic strip about that. Anyways, check out KenobiAndMe.com.
Nice little plug.
Yes, Mike will be very happy about that. Anyways, yes, we're talking about the Jedi. This is exciting because mm-hmm. I like talking about the Jedi. The Jedi are awesome. But we're going to kind of go a little bit in depth, or at least talk about some of the details involving the Jedi Order and things of that nature. So Carl's got it all broken down as to the different categories we're going to be addressing specifically.
Yes. I'm going
to let Carl kick us off.
Okay. Well, it's we're going to talk about the Jedi, and uh-huh. You know, there are these fabled characters from Star Wars. Jason loves the Jedi. We were trying to come up with a topic for this episode, and I proposed something. And this is the thing that's getting kind of crazy because we've been recording for over 3 years. There's a 118th episode that we're doing tonight. So mm-hmm. sometimes I'll come up with an idea and forget that we'd done it before. So, yeah. I mean, Graham, we do have two Han Solo episodes, which I'm still very proud of.
I mean, we will probably end up repeating some of these topics in the future.
Right.
Just simply because it's been long enough, but...
Yeah. Well, this one was, I think Jason said it was like, so why the topic I proposed, he's like, I think we've done that before. I'm like, I think you might be right. And, you know, Jason's the historian of the Wampa's Lair, so he looked it up.
I still have all of the Wampas their episodes in my iTunes feed, so I just go and I open that up and I scroll down and I look and see what they are. So
yeah, thank God for that. But Jason's like, yeah, we did that in episode 43. He's like, well, we could revisit it, or, and I was like, yeah, yeah. He goes, or we could just talk about the Jedi, and I was like, okay.
And there's a specific reason why Carl wanted said topic, and we'll bring that up later as we get to it. But
yes. So Jason helped me work it in here anyway.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, we're just going to kind of look at the Jedi and, you know, kind of who they are, what they are, the point of the Jedi Order, and then kind of looking at the master-apprentice relationship that the Jedi seem to have. And for me, anyway, I'm mostly going to be concentrating just on the films. Maybe a little bit TV show stuff, but the EU/Legend stuff, for me, that won't come up for this. Obviously, there is a huge expanding universe of the New Jedi Order. That's not what we're going to be discussing tonight.
No.
For two reasons. One, I'm not very well versed in it that much anymore. And two, it's not canon. Sorry. I was probably just pissed off a ton of people. I'm sorry. But, you know. No.
It could come back. It could come back as canon, but we just don't have stories in that time frame to tell us that yet.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
And also, when we're dealing with the Jedi Order, we're dealing with like the very structured order,
right,
that we see primarily in the prequels. So that is where the focus of this conversation was designed to cover. So that is why we are trying to keep it focused so that we don't just completely like the Jedi and like be talking for 17 hours straight, because that is an entire possibility of that happening. There's enough information out there. Carl is hiding behind his mic, and it looks a little bit like a TIE fighter where he's got his hands. It's kind of cool and kind of funny. Anyways, but yes, let's kick this conversation off.
Yes. So the Jedi, who are they? What are they? No. So, yeah, but when you're talking Star Wars, Jedi are a key aspect. In as much as the Force is, in as much as lightsabers are, Jedi are a very defining factor of the Star Wars mythos. And, you know, to me, what a Jedi essentially is, just the nuts and bolts of it, is these are the people that enact the Force. My favorite thing... And my favorite quote that kind of captures this is from the Clone Wars episode, The Gathering, in Season 5, where Yoda says, the Force made manifest a Jedi is. I think it's something just like that.
Nice.
And it's this great line where Yoda essentially gives us a definition of what a Jedi is. A Jedi is someone who makes the Force known, makes the Force visible to the world around them. So in a very real way, I mean, the Jedi are the mystical, spiritual leaders of the Star Wars universe, right? I mean, whether or not you consider the Force God, it is the mystical energy field, right? And, and in Star Wars, and the Jedi are the ones that make it visible, both by using its powers, both by teaching about it. But that is, to me, what a Jedi essentially is a Jedi is someone who makes the Force visible.
Yes. They are the vessels of the Force, the physical embodiment. And those that that perform the will of the Force, that is the ideal, anyways. Whether or not they always do that is the question, and we will probably talk on that later. But yes, they are the embodiment of the will of the Force, the knowledge of the Force, and they live that out, and they enact the will of the Force and. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going somewhere with that.
Well, Jason, I remember...
I lost the tangent.
Well, maybe, I'm going to help you out a little, hopefully.
Okay.
I remember in the past on shows, you've spoken about how your dad sometimes compared the Jedi to prophets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a fitting way of describing in an analogical way, because in a sense, you know, prophets make known the will of God. Well, that's kind of what the Jedi do in the Star Wars universe. They make the will of the Force known and do their best to help enact it. I think that's a key aspect of being a Jedi. And in the, in the Revenge of the Sith novel, which I'm currently rereading, I love that book.
I almost picked that up at a book sale.
Jason?
Say what?
You don't own the book?
No, I don't. I read it at the library.
All right. Listen to me, my friend. You're getting a present at Celebration.
Okay. I picked up Tales from Mos Eisley Cantina instead at the book.
You're an idiot, but okay. No, I'm just kidding. That is a good book, but it's not nearly as good as Matthew Stover's Revenge of the Sith.
The Tales from Mos Eisley Cantina was a paperback and was like half the cost. So okay. That's
there you go. That'll do it.
anyway,
yeah. At the end of the Revenge of the Sith novel. And I don't remember, I'm not there yet, but I'll get there soon. But there is that conversation, I think, between Yoda and Obi-Wan. Again, this isn't in the film, unfortunately, but they talk about how they still will continue to be Jedi. Even though there's no order, they are still Jedi. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important element for, even though Yoda seems to obviously get muddled down in all the bureaucracy and power games of the Jedi, which we'll talk about a little later on. I think Yoda is still at the heart of it, and Obi-Wan too, by the end of Revenge of the Sith, still know that they still have to be Jedi. They still have to be these actors of the will of the Force. And that doesn't change. Even if the order falls apart, them being Jedi does not cease to exist. Like, their identity remains being that of Jedi. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important. And if you've read James Luceno's Dark Lord, Rise of Darth Vader novel, kind of like the background, you know, main character, I can't remember the guy's name. Oh, Roan Shrine is how I pronounce
it. Yes, that's it.
But he and, you know, the girl that to Padawan that he kind of takes on, like, a lot of that novel is really good too, because he's trying to figure out how do we continue to be Jedi in light of this purge, in light of the fact that we'll be killed if we're publicly Jedi anymore. And of course, that's going to be a lot of what's happening with Kanan.
Yes.
So it's, I like these stories because it's, how do you still be a Jedi without an order? And it seems to answer the question, at least, though, can there be Jedi without a Jedi order? And the answer would be yes.
Yes.
Because, oh, go ahead.
You have something they're, at this point, with the dark times and, you know, post Order 66, Yoda, Obi-Wan, Kanan, all these other Jedi that are out there are trying to distill the idea of the Jedi down to its essence. What is the essence of a Jedi, and what does that mean for me? How am I supposed to live that out? Obviously, Yoda and Obi-Wan became hermits. Mm-hmm. Obi-Wan had a mission as a Jedi to keep an eye on Luke and to keep him safe. And Yoda seemed to just primarily just commune with the Force, with Qui-Gon, and keep learning and achieving knowledge and reevaluating the structure of the Jedi Order. And who knows what else he did, because he spent over 20 years on Dagobah by himself.
I want a comic series on that so bad. So bad.
I'll send you on a meditative retreat there.
I know. How about that? Oh, please do. Oh, thank God. So actually, just to play around a little bit right here, okay. I thought it'd be fun to look at kind of a little bit of the difference of how we see the Jedi, you know, a Jedi in the PT times, as opposed to, granted, the only Jedi we really see in the OT is Luke, Yoda, and Obi-Wan. But this is where I will pull in a little bit of Legends EU stuff. In the PT, the Jedi are essentially very monastic, right? In the sense of, like, they kind of withdraw from the world, although that they're still a part of it. They play a, you know, they play a role in the politics of the Republic. They're still very much apart from the world. They're, you know, the whole essence of detachment and whatnot.
They serve more of a police force. Mm-hmm. That step between you know, local police and full military action is the Jedi. They're that buffer zone, which is a good thing to do.
Right.
But when you get completely bogged down in the politics of what's going on, then we start having the problem. Right. And of course, by the time we get to Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, the Jedi are so intertwined and enmeshed into the bureaucracy and the politics of the Senate that they have no choice but to go with the Republic and become generals in this war. So,
And I think, you know, if you look at Yoda and Obi-Wan, the fact that they do, in a sense, go off and be hermits, that is almost the natural progression of the type of Jedi they would be. Right, they're not gonna go get involved with somebody like Kanan does. Right, granted, they're older. Yoda, especially, he's a very old Jedi. But Obi-Wan, has most of his life and adult life even was as a Jedi. So that's really the only way they understand how to live their lives. So of course they go off and do something somewhat hermit-like and meditative. Whereas you have somebody like Kanan, who's gonna go become part of the world and be a little bit more of an active force in it. You know, like the fact that Yoda doesn't go off and secretly, like, train little Jedi or, you know, try to create an uprising, right? They have a very clear sense of the future, and they have to wait right now, whereas somebody like Kanan is taking an active role right now.
It's interesting, though. Luke sort of takes on a Kanan-esque role as he becomes a Jedi, especially after Empire Strikes Back. He becomes much more of a rallying symbol as a Jedi, you know, dink dink Jedi, quote Jedi, because he's not fully a Jedi yet until at the end of Return of the Jedi. But he's someone with Jedi powers. He's got a lightsaber. He's able to command that sort of respect and that image, which is a great rallying cry for the Rebel Alliance. And so he sort of becomes, on a grander scale, similar to what Kanan is, what we're seeing Kanan do in Rebels. So
yeah, and just very briefly to go off into, you know, what we had in the EU, the new Jedi Order that Luke essentially establishes in all those novels, is a Jedi Order much more of the world, if you will, in the sense that they can take wives, they can have families. They're more ordinary Jedi than the kind of detached Jedi of the PT era. So, and I think that was, you know, when the EU writers were writing these stories, I think that was where they thought the natural progression of the Jedi Order ought to go. It should continue to be this organized institution, but some of the key tenets need to be tweaked a little. Twerked. Miley Cyrus is involved. You know, it needs to be changed a little bit. I just thought here's a fun little idea, Jason. Imagine if Qui-Gon Jinn wasn't killed in episode one. And he survived Order 66. I bet you so much Qui-Gon, the living force man, he would have been a Kanan figure. He wouldn't have gone off to meditate somewhere. He would have become a rallying cry for the rebellion that would be on the rise. That's how I see like Qui-Gon. Is I think he'd be somebody who'd be secretly on the front lines, still kind of doing his thing underneath it all. I could see even Qui-Gon like getting involved with a lady, kind of like Kanan does. Yeah, like somebody like Qui-Gon, I think, would have a different response than like Yoda and Obi-Wan did.
Well, he would definitely be someone who would follow the will of the living force. Right. I don't know if he would do anything so dramatic as get involved with the rebellion. I think he would he wouldn't stay still, though. He wouldn't become he'd become more of a nomad than a hermit, I think. He'd continue to wander the galaxy and do a little bit here, do a little bit there. I don't think he would stop anywhere. I think he'd keep moving.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. He'd be like, you know,
wandering samurai.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, that's a really interesting thought, though.
I know.
Now my brain is going, thinking of all these ideas that Qui-Gon could do. Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
I miss Qui-Gon.
I do too. He's great. Oh, Qui-Gon.
Tear. Anyways, shall we continue?
Sure. So, if you're going to talk about the Jedi, you can't talk about the Jedi and not bring up the Jedi Order. And that word in and of itself, order, right? I think the idea of the Jedi organizing is because they want to create a sense of order. Mm-hmm. Again, in the Revenge of the Sith novel, great book, by the way. Mace Windu, there's like some inner monologue stuff from Mace Windu, where basically Mace Windu talks about how he loves the Republic. And the reason he loves the Republic so much is because, you know, he knows what the world is like without the Republic, without that order, and how chaotic and messy and terrifying the world can be. So he loves the Republic and he loves being a Jedi because it maintains order. And I think that's the point of the Jedi Order is, you know, you have all of these like-minded individuals who obviously have a strong connection to the Force, and they figure, well, rather than all of us just do, you know, our own little private things, you know, we're going to band together and do something together. We're more powerful together than we are as individuals. So they create this sense of community, and the point of that community is, just like every individual's Jedi's kind of calling, is to make the Force visible, to make the Force's will kind of become real in the world. That's the point of the Jedi Order, is to bring about the will of the Force. And their way of knowing if they're doing that is if they're promoting peace and justice in the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of the point of the Order is, all right, we've got this Republic, and the point of the Republic is to create order. So let's help maintain that and maintain that peace.
Right. And the other thing with the Jedi Order is that it also serves as a sort of, you could call it a school system, an education system for new Jedi, for younglings and apprentices, to learn how to become a Jedi and how to operate as a Jedi, the tenets of the Jedi Order, if you will, you know, the what is required of them and the different skills and, you know, uses of the Force that a Jedi must have. And so rather than just have all these Padawans scattered throughout the galaxy, they all come to this central location where they can be taught, you know, in a more ordered and structured environment, which I'm sure was a great idea at the time, but then it's you know, too much of a good thing is never a good thing. but unless it's going to Star Wars Celebration.
yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, to me, that's the point of the Jedi Order, is to always be working to make sure that the Force's will is taking shape in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. But the thing is whenever you make something very organized, whenever you make an organization of any type, you can get bogged down in politics. You can get bogged down in what I would call legalism. Mm-hmm. You know, the Jedi are so, they have these tenets, they have these rules, all of which probably, you know, they have their purpose, they have their goodness. But when you get so bogged down in that, and I think this is, you know, like you see this in The Phantom Menace with Qui-Gon's character, for instance, you know, is he's not obsessed with all the little legalistic rules and regulations. To him, mm-hmm. it's the Force is constantly speaking, the Force is constantly, you know, calling for progress. And I think Qui-Gon sometimes looks at the council as holding back the Jedi Order. Not as if it's an evil, but more of just, you guys are so bogged down with what's not important that mm-hmm. I'm going to be the call for the voice of change. You know, like when he steps forward at the end of Phantom Menace and says, "I will train Anakin." I mean, it's like, you know, the code forbids it. You know, that's Mace Windu's immediate response. The code forbids it.
Right.
And, you know, Qui-Gon just doesn't see it that way. It's like, nope, this is the chosen one. The Force has revealed that to me, and I'm going to do it.
Right.
You know, so I don't think it's Qui-Gon. He's not like some like high school kid, you know, like a little teenager who wants to be rebellious. Like, well, no, I'm going to do what I want. I think Qui-Gon sincerely believes, well, nope, this is the will of the Force, and I don't care what the council says, essentially. And, right. you know, as we learned in the movie, like, that's why he's not on the council. You know?
Right. If you just follow the code, you would be on the council. You know, I will do what I must, Obi-Wan. You know, that's Qui-Gon in a nutshell.
Yeah,
I will do what I must.
Yeah,
you know, he's definitely, his loyalty is to a higher power, if you will. Mm-hmm. His loyalty is to the Force itself rather than to the Jedi Council.
Right.
And of course, by the time we get to the prequels, the Jedi Council has gotten so wrapped up in the minutiae, the details, the rules, that they sort of forgot that this is all supposed to be in pursuit of the Force.
Right.
And, you know, not that they're bad people, obviously. They're all very good people, although I know Teresa would disagree with me on Mace Windu because of what he did to Ahsoka. Teresa hates Mace Windu now because of the end of season 5 of the Clone Wars.
I can get on
lamer.
I can get on board with that.
So, but they're just completely confined by the rules of what they have established, rather than the greater idea of the Order. Which, of course, is what Palpatine plays off of when he plays them like a harp in order to bring down their destruction. You know, he's got them right where he wants them. And I swear, the man is the biggest villain in all of the movies, because he takes over an entire republic and takes down the entire Jedi Order from his armchair, basically. A gigantic armchair that swivels. I want that chair. but I mean, it's, and I, you know me, the Jedi are my favorite part of Star Wars. And I don't like to talk about this you know, this aspect of it, because I get frustrated with them, because I'm like, come on, it's right in front of you. Qui-Gon knew it. He's telling you about this, and you guys just sit there in your council chambers and say, well, no, it's the code. It's the code. And I'm like, the code is supposed to be, you know, in pursuit of the Force, and you don't fit the Force into the box of the code. You know, I just get frustrated with some of the council members from time to time.
Yep, Mace Windu's number one. Yeah, and like you kind of were, you know, hinting at there, Jason, and blatantly said, this is essentially what leads to the downfall of the Jedi Order then. Mm-hmm. You know, they're so focused on the legality of everything, the rules, and they get, you know, and they're too closely wedded to the politics of the Republic.
Right.
You know, it's like the Jedi Order, its intention is to serve the Force. But eventually it becomes kind of wedded to this idea of the Republic. And, you know, in order to maintain the peace of the Republic, they must serve the Senate. They must serve this, you know, the Chancellor. And as a result, they get drawn into this war. You know, and like you said, you know, Palpatine knows this. He knows how closely linked they are to the Republic.
Right.
And that plays right into his hand. You know, when the Clone Wars starts, you know, they get pulled into this war that they should have never been a part of. I'm actually right now, because as you all know, if you've been listening lately, I'm crazy about comics right now. And I've just started reading this Clone Wars series of comics, which are really good. And I know there's multiple series. This is a like 9-volume series. But the very first issue takes place 1 month after the Battle of Geonosis. And there's this great scene right towards the beginning of the comic where it's Mace Windu and Yoda sitting in Yoda's meditative chambers. And Yoda's kind of having this discussion with Mace about how he's still very wary about the fact that the Jedi should be generals. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this, I can't remember the line right off the top of my head, but he basically says to Mace Windu, you know, this is very dark ground we're treading on. You know, we're meant to be peacekeepers, not generals in an army. So, you know, getting drawn into the Clone Wars is ultimately what destroys the Jedi. You know, I mean, and Mace Windu says it at the beginning of Attack of the Clones, you know, we're keepers of the peace, not soldiers. By the end of Attack of the Clones, they're soldiers.
Right.
And soldiers, well, soldiers do, I mean, in the modern world, yeah, they in a sense do help maintain peace. But, you know, the goal of a Jedi is not to be a military force.
No.
And when they redefine themselves as such, it all falls apart. And again, when you watch the Clone Wars series, if you watch even Revenge of the Sith, all the scenes with the Jedi Council, all it is war meetings. That's it. That's all they talk about.
Right.
That is not the purpose of the Jedi Order. So that's their biggest flaw. They get pulled into this political game. They get pulled into this war mm-hmm. without ever really being meditative about it.
Right. And that's the problem. The problem of it is because both the Jedi Order and the Republic have been in existence for literally millennia, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years by the time we get to Phantom Menace. I think in the Legends continuity, it was something like 25 to 35,000 years before, you know, since the Jedi Order had been established. And in that time, they've just sort of symbiotically grown together to where, rather than the Senate and the Republic, you know, requesting assistance from the Jedi and submitting their requests to the Jedi and individual planets doing that sort of thing, the Senate says, oh, look, we need you guys to go take care of this. And the Jedi say, okay, when do we leave? You know, that sort of thing. Rather than the Jedi being this third party, it's the Senate. By the time of the Phantom Menace, and especially when you get into Attack of the Clones and the Clone Wars starts, the Jedi Order is under the control of the Senate, which is not where they're supposed to be. So,
yeah. And I think that's even why, you know, even like look at Anakin's character, who was a very young Jedi. I mean, he had been being trained as a Jedi for about 9 years by the start of the Clone Wars. And then the Clone Wars last about, what, 3 years, 4 years? Mm-hmm. And in that time period, the Jedi Order essentially has become a basically a weapon of the Senate. Mm-hmm. So Anakin's understanding of the Jedi Order is very much like that. You know, it's right. not a third party. It's not supposed to think on its own. It is at the whims of the Chancellor. It's at the whims of the Senate. So the Jedi go from being this third party group that, you know, kind of helps maintain the peace to it literally does. It becomes a weapon for the Republic. And that's some, you know, there's a lot of things in the Clone Wars TV series. I think they did a great job of this, where you have like some of, you know, like whenever like Obi-Wan and Anakin are on these missions to like backward, you know, backwater planets, some of the locals will say like, you know, you're Jedi, aren't you failing as peacekeepers? You know, that question comes up a lot in the Clone Wars series, mm-hmm. which I really appreciated, because it is. I mean, there's a lot of times where other characters, even like bounty hunters, will call them on it and just basically say, you know, Jedi aren't supposed to be soldiers. You're doing it wrong. You know,
right. Right.
When you have these outside forces, even voices saying like, you know, I'm confused. I thought Jedi were peacekeepers. Why are you soldiers in an army? You know, their identity has been very clearly redefined in light of the Clone Wars, and that leads to their downfall.
Right. And it's very interesting, the move that the Jedi make in Revenge of the Sith when they try to take out the Chancellor and they try to arrest Palpatine. It's very interesting, that move. You know, and Yoda even says it, to a dark place this line of thought will take us, when they, you know, they first bring up the idea that something may have to be done. Yoda says, to a dark place this line of thought will take us. And of course, that sparks the, you know, that's the first domino to fall in Palpatine's game, end game there. So it's very interesting, because, you know, the Jedi Order would have had to take control of the Senate, and they would be ruling the Republic, you know, until somebody new had been brought up and, you know, the emergency powers had been, you know, repealed or whatever the Jedi wanted them to do. And then depending on, you know, supposing they had arrested Palpatine, this is a hypothetical, supposing they had arrested Palpatine, what would have happened after that? You know, are the Jedi going to, you know, institute someone new, like Bail Organa or Padme as the Chancellor, you know, someone that is favorable to them, and then takes away the emergency powers, ends the war, and then after that, what happens? You know, are they going to completely back out, try and become a third party again, its own separate entity again? Are they going to retreat back into their halls? Or are they going to sit there over the shoulder of the Chancellor for, you know, to make sure that something, somebody like Palpatine never happens again? You know, and it would have been really interesting to see, you know, as sort of a what if idea, what would have happened if they had succeeded. You know, been a very interesting galaxy to find out what happened there.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. I mean, this was a lose-lose for them.
Right.
You know, obviously they lost, literally, because Palpatine saw to it. But even if, you know, Mace Windu had and the other Jedi Council members had succeeded in killing Palpatine that night, what then? Palpatine was, like, beloved by most of the galaxy.
Right.
Most of the Republic loves him because he has a really good public face. And the Jedi are the ones that are, you know, everybody has a wary eye out now, because, you know, they're basically a bunch of hypocrites, in a sense, you know, to the public view, because they're supposed to be these peacekeepers, and they're going around fighting wars.
Yeah.
I mean, their voice of credibility is lost.
Right. And the other thing is, you know, the Jedi would say, well, he's a Sith.
They don't care.
The galaxy doesn't know who a Sith is
right.
at this point. Nobody knows what a
Sith is. The Sith have been extinct for a millennium. I do not believe the Sith could have returned without us knowing.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, nobody knows what the heck a Sith is. You know, it'd be like, you know, Steve at Celebration. What's a Sith? What's a Sith? You know?
Yeah.
Man,
I have an inkling to go watch The Phantom Menace right now.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, it would be one of those things where, you know, even if they had succeeded, they would have been in a public relations nightmare, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It would have been seen as a coup, which, you know, technically it would have been classified as a coup too, but it would have been a hostile coup.
I believe it's pronounced Kaup.
Kaup? Okay.
Yeah.
Kaup. All right. It would have been a hostile Kaup. and the public at large would not have gone along with it.
Right.
Oh, man, we've gotten into some really interesting hypothetical conversation here.
I know it.
That wasn't even planned. This is awesome. this is like the best part of podcasting with you, because we go on these tangents and they always turn out more awesome than they were supposed to. They always turn out more awesome than they were supposed to. It's great. Anyways.
But yeah, I think we've done a good job of pointing out the flaws of the Jedi Order.
Yeah, yeah. Let's bring it back around to something a little more positive.
There's really nothing else to say that's positive. No, I'm kidding. Like, yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, obviously the intention of the Jedi Order is good and it makes sense, but it got convoluted because Palpatine knew how to do that.
Right.
You know, and that's awesome. You know, I'd love to see a standalone movie focusing on a Jedi. I'm getting on a tangent, but I'd like to see a standalone movie focusing either on a Jedi we have seen or maybe just a small Jedi character before the Phantom Menace. Like, I'd love to just see like a Wild West style, you know, Jedi story, you know, just something where we develop a really cool character and see them do something, you know? Yeah. Jason's freaking out over there.
what we need is Qui-Gon Jinn on a mission right after he passes trials.
Oh, that'd be cool.
We need a standalone movie about Qui-Gon Jinn right after he passes trials.
Oh, that'd be awesome. And you could get Liam Neeson to do it. The dude has a timeless face. Like, seriously, just have him shave, because obviously they had him, like, they colored his hair a bit to make him look older for Phantom Menace. You could easily have Liam Neeson now do a standalone Qui-Gon Jinn movie.
I don't know quite about that. I mean, he's got quite a few more wrinkles and a grizzled appearance.
I don't know, but it's so easy. He's
turning into a little bit like Harrison Ford.
No, no. I think he's in better shape than Harrison Ford.
Well, I mean,
he did just do Taken 3.
I mean, he's doing like Taken and then every other like Taken knockoff movie he's in. So,
yeah. But no, I would love to see a Qui-Gon Jinn movie.
Yeah,
how cool would it be? Because then you'd have Dooku in it too, right? You'd have to, if he's just about to take the trials. Dooku was his master.
Oh,
right.
That would be awesome.
Yeah,
that would be terrific. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Lucasfilm. The heck would be stupid? Like a Boba Fett movie? Screw that. We want Qui-Gon.
We want Qui-Gon and Dooku.
Yeah. Yeah. How cool would that be?
That would be incredible.
Like the movie could open with them sparring, like training together.
Why did we never think of this in our spin-off movie conversations before?
The will of the Force just hit us, my friend.
It did. Okay. Speaking of Qui-Gon and Dooku, one of the other aspects we want to talk about was the Master Padawan relationship. And this is where the whole idea of this topic got started, because you wanted to talk about who?
Ezra and Kanan. I love this relationship between the two of them, and I think it's really awesome. I think Kanan is a great mentor, because what I really appreciate about the relationship between Kanan and Ezra in comparison to all of the Jedi, you know, apprentice-master relationships we've seen in the films and the Clone Wars is the masters are always tend to be a little bit like, you know, they're obviously a little bit more aesthetic, they're a little bit more withdrawn, a little bit more of just like philosophical teachers, whereas Kanan is very flawed, and his flaws are very visible to his apprentice. And I think that it's a learning game for both of them, and I think we get that aspect from Obi-Wan. You know, for a lot of the stuff that we've seen, you know, with Obi-Wan and Anakin, Obi-Wan is obviously very clear about the fact that he's also still learning as well. But I think that's the only place you really get that. But what I really like with the Kanan Ezra relationship that we're seeing in Rebels is that Kanan is very much a flawed teacher, but Ezra is very patient with him as well. And I think it's making Kanan a better Jedi as a result.
Yeah. It's a shared learning experience. You know, Kanan is teaching Ezra how to be a Jedi Padawan, and Ezra is teaching Kanan how to be a Jedi Knight.
Right.
A Jedi Master, and that dynamic there strengthens both of them. It's a really, really interesting dynamic that we haven't ever seen before in Star Wars, which I'm really glad that we get it here, because it's so interesting, so unique. But yeah, there's a lot of, you know, obviously the, you know, in order to become a Jedi Knight, all Jedi have to be apprenticed to a master. And, you know, after they've done their general training, their general studies, they get to, you know, be apprenticed and start learning from a master. And then they have their trials and all that fun stuff. It's a really interesting system. I like it.
Yeah.
I like that system of education, if you will.
Right.
I wish more education systems were like that.
It would
be more fun.
Think of Eastern cultures, right? Mm-hmm. It's still a lot. It's not as huge as it used to be, but in like Japan, ancient Japan, China, you know, if you did something in life, you were often apprenticed to someone. Or even think of like famous musicians. A lot of times, like, you know, they were apprenticed by somebody. Like, I'm thinking of, you know, Miles Davis apprenticed himself to another famous jazz musician, right? He left Juilliard in New York City. He said, screw this formal crap. I'm going to go learn from one of the best, right? So there is – we have history of how prolific and great an apprentice-master relationship can be. And I think it's so great that the Jedi do this. Like, they do – while they're young, you know, they have this formal training, you know, kind of the academic side, the basics, mm-hmm. Here's how you live your life. But then they set them out with a master, because they don't just set them out on their own quite yet, because there's no way they'd be ready. They need to observe it and learn from that.
Learn how to apply all the knowledge they've gotten
right
in the real world.
Exactly. So. Exactly. And I think that's just a great way of doing it. And it does. It builds up a sense of community in the Jedi as well. Like, it really is a brotherhood and sisterhood. And I think that's really important. I'm going to go on a little tangent real quick, just because I was thinking of this just now.
Sure.
You know, the fact that Kanan is getting better with his lightsaber, mm-hmm. you know, I wouldn't imagine, you know, some people would be like, well, how's he getting better? It's like, well, clearly he's doing more training, because he's training Ezra, and he's also training himself. And to me, the perfect example of this is look at Luke Skywalker. How the heck does he go from being like a subpar duelist in Empire to basically hold, you know, owning Vader in Return of the Jedi? Clearly he's been practicing.
Right.
So there's no reason Kanan can't do that as well.
Right. And the other thing with Kanan is that he has experience with dueling and with lightsaber combat. And so part of it is probably just reacquainting himself mentally and physically with the, you know, the move sets and the training that he had already learned. It's, you know, it's more of a brush up in some cases than it is, you know, completely relearning and retraining some stuff. So he's already got some of that, you know, in him. It just, you know, dust it off, you know, take it off the shelf, get it, you know, back in use. Right. So,
well, it's like, you know, a couple summers ago, I was away for like 6 weeks and I never touched a guitar in those 6 weeks. I came back, like, I still remembered how to play guitar, but I had to practice a bit because my finger calluses were kind of gone. So you had to like re-break your fingers in and stuff. You have to kind of brush off the dust, but it's easy to regain that. And it's like, obviously Kanan knew the basics. He just hasn't really touched them in a long time.
Right. The I have a perfect example of this that just happened to me today. actually, now that we're talking about this, in my stage combat class last semester, we were working with broadswords at the end of the semester, and we had to do a scene. We had a specific choreography that we had to do with the broadswords. This semester, we've been working with rapier and dagger, which is a much more, you know, sophisticated, much more elegant style of fighting, much more precise. But at the end of the semester, we're going to be able to qualify try and qualify for certification in unarmed combat, broadsword combat, and rapier and dagger combat. And so part of what we're doing throughout these couple weeks right now is we're reacquainting ourselves with the previous combats that we learned last semester. And today we had to do broadsword, and we hadn't gone over the scenes again. Some of us still had like the videos of our scenes on our phone, and we're like, what the heck did we do? Oh my gosh, I don't remember this at all. And then we looked at it and we started going through the motions, you know, real slowly, just, you know, trying to reacquaint ourselves with it. And by the end of it, I was like, oh yeah, I totally remember this. You know, it's that muscle memory that kicked in about, you know, 15, 20 minutes into working on it. And it was like, oh, yeah, you know, I remember this. We did it, like, constantly last semester. So it was just one of those cool things. And so I'm guessing part of that has to do with Kanan's improvement in lightsaber dueling. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. There's kind of a random discussion on Jedi.
Yeah, it no real rhyme or reason to it, but it was a lot of fun. We do have one final thing with the Jedi. Mm-hmm. So, real quick, top three Jedi.
Just for the heck of it.
Yeah, I did mine a little bit differently. Okay. I decided to not do anybody from the films that speak. Because I was like, otherwise it's going to be Yoda, Obi-Wan, and Luke, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. And we get all of the big ones, which, not a bad thing. They're damn great, it. But I wanted to be different, you know, because that's course. Otherwise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, I, you know, it wouldn't be me. and so none of my Jedi have actual speaking lines in the movies itself. And I picked these on, you know, how I like them, you know, as their looks, how I played with them as toys, and, you know, their characterizations in comics, books, and TV series. So that's how I picked my list. And just because I was like, I wanted to be different. So, sorry.
Great. well, I ranked mine just based on who they are as Jedi, not necessarily their characters. So I ranked them in, like, who is my favorite Jedi? You know, favorite three Jedi, as opposed to, like, you know, because if this was, like, favorite characters, it would be in a different order. Right. It's just, like, just looking at it in the context of a Jedi, you know, which three are my favorite Jedi.
Awesome.
P.S. I just remembered something that I totally forgot to bring up earlier in the show, which is worth mentioning before we do list our top three.
Okay.
And that is, in Luke's training on Dagobah, Yoda constantly says to him, a Jedi's strength flows from the Force. So again, I just want to mention that because I think it's really important, again, because that's how Yoda, again, understands a Jedi. And I think he kind of is reminded of that in light of his exile. That, you know, again, if a Jedi is to be the Force visible, to make the Force visible, then obviously all that they do must be in connection with the Force. So as a Jedi is, in essence, someone who is in communion with the Force, because that's where they get all of these abilities from. It's not their own workings. It's their connection to the Force that gives them that ability. It's right. not their, like, their power alone. They're not magicians. They are people empowered by the Force.
Right.
So I think that's a huge part of being a Jedi as well, is knowing that their power is something that comes from without.
Yes.
And within. Whereas the Sith see the Force
something
as simply...
Something that they have to draw on rather than something that is already there and automatically gives them these abilities and these powers and things like that.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah. And obviously contrast that with the Sith, who see the Force as nothing more than a tool.
Right.
So that is not how a Jedi views the Force. No. So
and that's why the Sith are tools. Anyways, top three Jedi real quick. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first? I'll go first.
Well, how about you go three, then I go three, then you go two, then I go two.
Yeah. Because
we're not going to really explain it. We're just going to say it.
Yeah. Number three for me, in my random Jedi grab bag, is Satin. I don't know why. I always like the guy. Sacy Tin.
Oh, Sacy Tin. You cracked for a second, so I heard it was Satin. And I was like, what? Oh, Satan? No, I didn't know he was a Jedi. No.
Sacy Tin. Although he does have those two horns.
He does.
Oh my gosh. although he is telepathic and a great starfighter pilot, so that's kind of cool.
My number three is Luke Skywalker.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's an awesome guy.
He is an awesome Jedi.
He's yes. My number two is Shaak Ti. Always thought she was awesome. Mm. So
yeah, she dies like multiple different ways depending on where you read it.
It's true. It's true. It's very true.
My number two is Yoda.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yep. I mean, wizened old Jedi Master. How can you not have him in there? For me, number one, shocker of all sharks, Kit Fisto.
Oh, of course.
Of course. You know, I'm sure you're completely flabbergasted at why I picked him. But
well, you'll be flabbergasted with my number one. It's Qui-Gon Jinn.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't see that coming at all. Oh, we've been podcasting way too long together.
No, that don't you ever say that.
Oh, no. I mean, we just know each other so well because we've been podcasting for so long.
Oh, man. Oh, boy. Well, anyway, there is kind of our discussion on the Jedi and what we think of them and how they are perceived in the films. And we had to end it with some sort of little list. Why not?
Why not? Why not? You know, I mean, and of course, we could have, dedicated an entire episode to any one of these specific little topics. But, you know, we sort of a general overview today, just that sort of thing. But before we wrap things up, we've got an awesome matchup challenge thing that was sent to us. And to remind you of what that was, I'm going to turn it over to Carl.
Yeah, so our Larian friend Jeffrey Beaumont wrote to us a few weeks ago, and he says, new challenge for you two. One will be good and the other will be evil. Each of you will create a squad of your best soldiers using six people of non-force characters. You present your case on why you should win, and us, the listeners, will vote on who will win. The scenario is you pick a general planet description, a forest or a desert. There are no vehicles, spacecrafts, or lightsabers, and it is all ground combat. So Jason and I, at the end of the last episode, we kind of changed things up a little because we didn't really want one of us to be all evil and one of us all bad. So we put together a team of good and bad. So we each picked three good guys and three bad guys, and that's our team.
Yes.
So I want to preface by saying that obviously, in reality, these six people would not work well together because a lot of them are enemies. But right. Just ideally, we're just going to say that they are a team together. They will work together. And this is just on a generic planet. There is, completely like neutral ground. So nobody's getting any advantages here. It's completely neutral ground. And Jason and I have six very different people, as you can probably guess by the types of people Jason and I are. So we should probably list our whole teams as once, don't you think?
Yes. And then after we list our teams, we will provide an explanation of why we picked these and how and why our team is better and will win.
I know. Whenever I do something like this, I've got to get some sort of Matt Kroenke style pump up music.
Oh, of course.
So. Alrighty then.
We're just totally jamming out to Final Countdown.
I know. I love that song. It's so good at pumping you up. But Jason, I'll go first.
Okay.
And so I'm just going to list my six. Jason's going to list his six, and then I'll give my explanation as to why I think my team would win. So my six are, I have Han Solo, Chewbacca, Dash Rendar, Boba Fett, General Grievous, and Embo. Embo the Bounty Hunter, not my kitty.
Of course. My team, in stark contrast,
very stark.
It's going to be Jar Jar Binks, R2-D2, Zeb Aurelius, Cad Bane, Hondo Ohnaka, and Mara Jade as the Emperor's Hand.
There you go.
Jason. And why is your team going to win?
My team is going to win because they are all incredibly efficient fighters. All right, so I'm going to give a quick breakdown of all of my troops real quick. I've got Han Solo, who is a scrappy, no holds barred fist fighter when he has to be. He can hit almost anything he shoots at. And you got Chewbacca, who's a great shot with that bowcaster. He's physically overpowering. He will crush you. Got Dash Rendar, which I will never forget the line from the Shadows of the Empire novel where Lando says to Leia, he can pick bolts off of a table 100 yards away with his blaster without even standing up. The dude is a dead-eye shot, so look out for that. You've got Boba Fett. I don't even need to explain why. But come on, it's Boba Fett. And General Grievous, who... Oh, crap, that's right. I'm not allowed to have lightsabers. Damn it, I almost wish I didn't pick him.
He'll have his blaster, though.
He'll have his blaster. Okay, crap. Well, he's my throwaway. Damn it! I had Hondo and Naka, but I can't cross him out for Grievous. I'm like, oh, that's right, I can get away with some lightsaber dueling. But it's like, oh, actually, he'd be good with his Magna Staff Guard, too. So.
Oh, yeah, his Magna Staff.
Exactly.
Yeah, that'll work.
So he's good with that. And then Embo, who is, to me, almost the best bounty hunter. I mean, he gives Boba Fett a run for his money. Cad Bane, please, whatever. Dude's a has-been. So, yeah, that's why I think all of my men are especially great with a blaster. They don't even need to get close to you before they shoot you dead. And if they got close, all of them in hand-to-hand combat are going to be a force to reckon with. So,
okay, well, here's why my team will win. And I've thought this out very, very carefully. And I'm sure you're going, why the heck did you put Jar Jar on there? You'll get there. Okay, so the way my team breaks down, Zeb, Cad Bane, and Mara Jade, it's the Emperor's Hand, are going to be like the three primary like fighters. They're, you know, with their blasters and their hand-to-hand stuff. I mean, come on, Cad Bane was Boba Fett before Boba Fett, so don't give me that crap about Cad Bane. What? You know, don't give me that.
Hate Cad Bane.
And I mean, he's got the awesomest hat in the galaxy.
Embo?
Just saying. Well, Embo's is pretty cool. Embo's comes in a close second, but I mean, the guy, Cad Bane killed somebody to get his hat back. You know, he's that ruthless. Hondo, just unpredictable. He'll come at you with a blaster or a sword. You know, like an actual sword. And he's just unpredictable in general. So you got to have that sort of wild card. R2, great support. He's going to make sure everybody's got what they need. He's going to, you know, pull in some last minute heroics, you know, that sort of thing. Incredible. And Jar Jar, sometimes all you need is a bit of dumb luck to get you out of a scrap. And Jar Jar's got dumb luck by the buttload. So, and I mean, obviously, sometimes you just need someone to run across the middle of the field screaming and waving their arms to distract everybody, and he's pretty good for that too. Jar Jar, we need a diversion.
Yeah. Dash just pulls out his blaster, done.
Well, go right between his eyes.
Oh man. So there you go. Our first ever team matchup. Team Jason versus Team Carl.
Yes. And we'll put this all out on our social media and everything, and you guys will be able to do that. And Carl, where can they vote on this or send in Larian inquiries or just get in touch with us? Where can they do that? I remembered to say that this time. So
yes, good. And I'm glad you brought that up too, because we could use some new Larian inquiries. We actually don't have one for this episode, so if you have any Larian inquiries, please feel free to send those in. And you can do that by going to the following, facebook.com/wampaslairpodcast. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampaslair. Or you could send us an email at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com.
Excellent. And also, folks, please, please, please go and give us a rating and review on wherever you get the podcast, whether it be iTunes or Stitcher or whatever podcatcher you use. Those are the only two I'm really familiar with. So I will say those.
Yeah, we could really use an iTunes review. It's been a while since we've had one, so we'd really appreciate it.
It's been since October.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so that's like 5 months. So
yeah.
Yeah, so if you got a chance, if you haven't written a review for us on iTunes, it could be short and sweet. We'd really appreciate it. It just really helps us. So but yeah. Thank you for all you Indeed. Already do, Larians.
Yes, indeed. And any final thoughts before we wrap up this episode?
I'm good to go.
All right. Well, in that case, thank you everybody so much for listening to this episode of the Wampa Slayer podcast. This has been episode number 118, The Jedi. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.
Yes, a Jedi's strength flows from the Force.